Radio.
Hey, this is your host Brian Wayne here, and I'm here to let you know, in case you did not know already, that the Cheers to Comics podcast has since evolved. And if you're looking for a new shiny place to get your comic books from, then you need to head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com. It's like cheerstocomics.com, only with a shop in front of it. Shopcheerstocomics.com, and if you use code PODCAST at checkout, you're going to save yourself 10%. And I'm constantly adding new inventory, hot spec books, everything, any type of book under the sun. As it comes under my radar and it gets added into the inventory, I make it available to you. So remember, head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com and use code PODCAST at checkout and save yourself 10%. Welcome back to the Cheers to Comics podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wayne, and this is episode 393. The 393rd episode of the Cheers to Comics podcast will be a Creator Corner. Oh yeah, bringing it back. I'll be talking to some amazing creators. Some creators that, if you don't already know their name from their Kickstarter fame, you're fixing to know who they are. These guys are going to blow up. They brought you books like Hocus Pocus and Grandma Chainsaw. We're talking to the one and onlys, Alan Dunford and Will Radford, or as how I will forever go forward referring to them as the Ferds. So, I'm very excited to open up the year with this interview. It's been scheduled, I don't know, at least twice throughout 2022, and just, I don't know, if you're a regular listener, you realize 2022 was cuckoo bonkers for the show, but we're starting off right this year. God damn, are we starting off right this year. So, without any further ado, I bring to you the Ferds. All right, Alan, Will, how are you, gentlemen?
We are, well, I'm speaking for Will. We're both fantastic.
Yep. I have nothing to add to that.
When you say you're speaking for Will, and like the 3-minute dynamic I've already experienced between the two of you, you guys almost seem as one, you know? Yeah. So it's, I could see you two speaking on each other's behalves quite often. So probably, yeah. That's it's got to be almost relieving in a way, you know. One person just takes the reins, and the other one's like, "I'm gonna take a break this time." You know what to say.
Alan and I have a strange history because we actually just like in traditional body horror style, we just like split off from one entity,
yeah,
and then we killed that entity, and it became us. I'm sorry, I've been reading a lot of cosmic horror lately. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that's on my mind.
I dig it. Well, like I was saying before, this interview is a long time coming. This is the kickoff interview for 2023. Last year it was a strange year. So I figured I'm gonna do 2023 real nice. And I gotta say, after reading Pocus Hocus, getting that Kickstarter in the mail, even just after opening up the Kickstarter and seeing it, my roommate looked at, he was even like, "Whoa, this cover! Like this is an amazing cover, man."
The trade's awesome. Yeah, Brian did such a good job on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's everything about this, from cover to the final page, is just it sucked me in, and to the point where I felt I was legitimately mad at myself that the last couple of times we tried to interview didn't go through, because I was like, I should have talked about this so long ago. It was such an amazing read. I can honestly say that as somebody that's been kicking around the idea of storytelling myself, the amount of inspiration I got from reading this book.
Oh man,
seriously,
I got chills. Thank you.
Oh that man, I say that with all of the sincerity there is to say that with. I just ideas just started pouring out of my head because of how, I mean, this story is everything that I want in storybook telling. Because I like my horror, you know. I like the fact that there's weight to the situations, to the point, you know, people die, you know. Yep. It's not all bubblegum and all that. And I say that because, I mean, not that horror's bubblegum these days, but when you add in comedy in the manner that you do, horror can often get drowned out. And, you know, not that Pocus Hocus is completely horror. That also goes for Grandma Chainsaw too, which I'm going to talk plenty about. Just with the amount of laughs that you get out of this Pocus Hocus specifically, it was inspiring to know that the book, not that this is the book I want to create, but a book the emotions that I got out of this book is what I want to deliver. And I just, man, delivery really is the key word with what you guys did here from front. Oh. Like you absolutely killed it on Pocus Hocus.
Thank you. Thanks. And I just want to, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, man.
Where were you? No, I just want to say a lot of that delivery is, I just want to give credit where credit's due is Alan, because he understands comedic timing really, really well. I understand awkward situations.
Okay. That's what you were born into.
Yeah, right. Right. Darker, awkward situations, and then Alan finds these like really hilarious zingers and comedic timing in some of it. So, but yes, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. Don't worry about that at all. That takes me to one of the questions that I'm very, very curious about is your guys's the inspiration behind these genres. Like you say, Alan, you're the funny one, if you will, and Will, you know, those awkward moments. Let's talk about the comedy that you ingest. You know, what is it that inspires you? What other comedy types inspire you? Because I mean, I'm a massive fan of comedy, specifically stand-up.
Yeah, so so for me, one of my favorite stand-ups is actually Anthony Jeselnik. I love him a lot, even though we don't go that hardcore.
No. Not quite.
Yeah. But I love a lot of satirical stuff and dry humor. You know, I guess my favorites for comedy, my favorite movie is Thank You for Smoking. I absolutely love that movie. Yeah. And I love stuff like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Just these wild, crazy moments where it's more everyone else's reaction to what's happening around them. And they can't believe that someone could be this ridiculous or this stupid. That's the kind of stuff that I really like that.
I dig it, man. I dig it. No, that's there's and you have to almost ask that question because there's so many different varieties of comedy out there now, and it's you're not a one trick pony in this book, so it's really hard to say what you're inspired by, because it almost seems like you're inspired by almost everything, and that's not a bad thing at all. I mean, in any way. So I mean, it's out of my own curiosity as a comedy fan, you know, something I have to know.
Yeah. But, what about you, Will? What's yours?
Yeah, no, I trace Alan is probably going to reach to the screen and murder me. I always go back to Beetlejuice. And the reason why I always go back to Beetlejuice is because that for me was something as a kid that was really like, I mean, it opened some doors in my mind. I remember I loved the cartoon and I wanted to watch this movie. And I had relatives telling my mom, don't let him rent the movie from Blockbuster because the movie is dark. Like it's not like the cartoon. Beetlejuice is not a good guy. It's scary. It's freaking out. And then I watched the movie and just, drove everybody nuts with it for the next, you know, however many years of my life. I loved it. It didn't scare me. In fact, I thought it was very funny even from the time I was a kid. And it really, at that age, opened my eyes to like, wow, things can be like threatening, but you can also laugh at them, you know?
Right.
And that's always been it for me. Dark comedy is cathartic because I find that like a lot of times you're laughing at the dark behavior of people or human beings. And it's like you're laughing from a place of like knowing. It's like I've experienced this in my life. I know how that feels. And it's just cathartic to be able to connect that irony there. So, you know, I've always loved it. Alan's always loved it. So whenever we get together and talk about ideas, it's really like, we have two separate characters who are communicating with each other, and they're characters that have been built by our creative experiences growing up. And then we branch off and form characters in the comic books from that. So
yeah,
it's
cool though, because like now that we're talking about it a little bit, like, and we see it back and forth, right? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like, Will, you're a little bit more responsible for some of Pocus's stuff, and I'm a little bit more responsible for some of the demon stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, the demon's more of a dimwit, right? And Pocus is just jaded.
Well, the demon is more mischievous than Pocus, yeah. Is the thing. Pocus is, I come from a background in theater, and Pocus is a personality type that I sort of have, you know, fun playing with, the idea of like the drunken actor who's sick of fame, you know, all of that stuff. And then of course I immediately connected the idea to Dr. Faustus when we started talking about it and you know, selling your soul to the devil and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'd say we definitely have our own qualities and strengths we bring to the table.
Yep.
I dig it. And, you know, writing duos, I can't imagine how difficult that would be without it being the perfect pairing. Because it really, if it isn't the perfect pairing of creators co-writing, then it's easy to tell. You know, I mean, it comes out choppy. And this, it is seamless. But at the same time, after you guys describing your inspirations now, it's fun to, after, you know, just going through and rereading Pocus Hocus again right before this interview, like hearing the voices of the characters, it definitely stands out. So now going forward, I'm like, oh yeah, I know.
Yeah.
All right.
I feel like if this were ever adapted to some kind of like animated series or something with voice actors, Alan and I would have like very, very, yeah. very specific notes about how these characters talk. And that would probably be the only thing, like, I mean, creatively we would like really want to get in there and have control over is like that, because we have voices that we sort of talk to each other with when we're writing these scripts. And it's just, it's so much fun.
I like that you say that, because you almost hear that voice too, as when you're reading it, you know, these characters do have voices coming off of paper. You know, they have that much character. There is so much character to them. You can sense their demeanor, and it's. I mean, even the way it's lettered, man. The way Dave Lentz letters, like the servant. What's the servant?
Ivan.
Yes, yes. It's, there are no spaces, punctuation, anything like that. The yeah. font you use. You have a voice to that. Like, he's just a
Dave is solely responsible for that, because we didn't write it that way in the script.
Wow.
And Dave moved together. He said, I think this would be better for the character. And of course, you know, Pocus Hocus is our first comic book, so we didn't, you know, want to question it, because who are we? You know what I mean?
Well,
so we're still figuring it out, you know.
Dave, yeah, I think Dave really taught me the letterer's responsibility is and can be within the medium of comics. Because if you've never worked directly in comics before, sometimes lettering is not something that you think about.
Dude, that's something I thought about.
Right. And I mean, like, he's completely rearranged my viewpoint on this, because I would argue that the lettering in Pocus Hocus is kind of like a character in and of itself, especially. And we're doing things like that too in the second volume of this, that like, or the second arc of this, that is real, that's, we're finding new ways of doing this stuff. And it's just, it's really incredible. I mean, yeah, you know,
we're at the writing part. Oh, go ahead, Will.
No, just really quick, working on creative projects where you're also learning while having fun and creating. I mean, it's just the best case scenario. Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fun because, like Will said, we're always trying to push. We're pushing ourselves, and we also want to push our team too, right? Mm. Because we're sticking with the same guys, just because we love working with everyone, and we felt like if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And then whenever we get to the Grandma Chainsaw stuff, we'll talk more about our decision with that. But you know, before I forget, though, to backtrack just a little bit, like when it comes to the writing duo stuff, Will and I have been best friends since high school. And we just finished writing a short story for Roseblood Manor 2 that they're building right now. And it was so cool because we literally just talked about this on Sunday or whenever we got together last.
I don't know my days.
And Will was getting ready to leave. And he's like, you know, we knocked that out pretty quick, and it's just nice because he and I have never, like, it's cool when you find that writing partner, right? Mm-hmm. When you guys are just feeding off of each other and no one's ego's getting in the way, and everyone is just like, Will and I are just having a blast. Like, we're cracking up whenever we're writing the stuff. And if we're not having fun or making ourselves laugh, then we know it's not going to deliver. So
absolutely.
I don't know. It's just cool, man. Like, because it's just fun.
It is. One of the things that we mentioned in that conversation too, is we were talking about like writers' rooms, you know, for various shows and things like that. And I mean, it's like, I've never been in one of those or sat in on one of those, but I imagine
that sound like the funnest job in the world, though?
Yeah.
it does.
I was just having this conversation the other day. And not for the first time. I feel like that would be the funnest job in the world, especially in a comedy room.
Oh,
sitting
yeah.
around with all of the funniest people in a circle, all putting your heads together, making super jokes. Like, yes. It sounds like the greatest gig ever, next to maybe making comics.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a requirement for the job. You know, if you guys aren't making, you know, yourselves laugh, you're not going to make an audience laugh. And I mean, I think Alan and I have that kind of understanding. And the thing that I expressed to him that I found so odd was that in the past I have tried to pair up with you know, other people and write and, you know, people who, you know, who you know like to write their stuff and I like to write my stuff, and it's like, okay, let's come together and do something, and you can't do it. And it's not because that they're bad collaborators or they're but like writing is so internal that you have to find someone who also speaks that language, and you can't really plan that. And I guess that Alan and I have just always had that sort of you know, banter back and forth really ever since we, you know, were friends in high school. So it was kind of like right under our noses the whole time. And we never discovered it until we started writing a comic book. So.
Yeah. Until COVID happened. And I was like, hey, Will, you want to write a comic book? You're like, sure. Right. We don't have anything else going on. And then here we are. Pocus Hocus.
Here we are.
Damn. Yeah. So, I mean, that takes me to definitely one of my questions was, what the hell made you guys want to write a comic? I mean, and what were your backgrounds in creating before that?
Like I said, it was just one of those, like, I just reached out to Will just because I kind of had the story in my head for Pocus. And
when the story start? Like, when did it start developing in your head originally?
I really like talking about this because it started when I was like 7. Because I was trying to make my own comic book, and it didn't go past the first page because I can't draw anyway, but it was this book called The Magician, and it was just about a superhero magician, and that was it. And like, it's just crazy how stuff like that just stays with you. Mm-hmm. Right. So my background, from creative standpoint, is music. And that's really it. it didn't translate to this, but, I don't know. It was just one of those. I was just feeling strong about it. And I just called Will up, and Will said, yeah. And it was crazy how fast everything has happened since then. You know, Will mentioned earlier that his background's in theater, and the way that we storyboarded everything and started work on everything is huge kudos to Will, because he was responsible for us getting all the characters together and getting everyone in line. It was funny because it looked like, it looked like an FBI's most wanted board, because we had like this cork board with all this stuff tacked to it about where our characters are going, what are they feeling? Because that was the most important thing to us before anything else. It was, will our characters be relatable? Will they be good? Will they be three-dimensional?
Mm-hmm.
So, Will, you can take it from here.
So you guys knew enough to flesh it out to that level without ever writing anything before,
right?
What school system did you guys go to? Because I know in public schools they weren't trying. I mean, I didn't leave school with the knowledge to be able to do anything.
I think where this comes from, and Will, you will probably have a way better answer than what I will. How my and Will's relationship formed was actually over movies. Mm-hmm. And we always talk about, we like this character in a movie, or we like this story in a movie. And it's kind of been under our noses the whole time, right? Because of the movies that we like are very character driven. So we kind of just took that. It was internalized, and then we just projected it on, well, let's make something that we would read. So, Will, you want to go ahead now?
Yeah, I just to add to that really quick, I think Alan might even be a little bit too modest in saying that, because I think that we both wanted to write a comic book for a while, and I would imagine that Alan, he has much more of an extensive knowledge of two subjects in particular, comic books and theology, or mythology or that. Okay. That has always impressed me, because I love myth and I don't know the first thing about it. So, I had written, I come from film and theater is that's been my areas. Those have been my areas. So I come from a background of, I've written play scripts before, I've written screenplays. I've always wanted to write a graphic novel or something that's for that specific medium, but I knew I didn't want to be the guy who was I have this great idea for a movie and I can't afford to make it. Let's make it into a graphic novel. I understand that film and comics are two different mediums. So it was really about having the right idea to fit into a comic book. And, Alan had that. And when he came to me with the idea, it just let loose all these, additional ideas, and I guess that the rest is history. But really, I think for me, I had written screenplays and play scripts before. So what I did when we started working on Pocus Hocus was I started formatting that almost in the way you would a screenplay.
Awesome. Yeah, if you ever look at one of our scripts, it could probably be immediately adapted to a stage play just with how everything's laid out on it.
Mm-hmm. I dig it.
Yeah,
I dig it. That's a nice little. I mean. So now I have to know. I mean, you guys, Alan, since 7 years old, and Will from a young age too, wanted to write comics. When did comics come into your life? What's the history there? Where did that begin?
For me, it was an early age, because at the time Kroger sold our supermarket called Kroger. I'm not sure if you guys have that. Or people are listening. I don't know the nationwide reach for Kroger. So we had a Kroger, and every Sunday my grandma would take me there when she would go grocery shopping, and she would buy me a comic book. And this is the part of the story I hate telling, so you could beep this part out, make it sound like I'm just swearing a lot. I had a 3-ring spiral hole punch notebook.
Okay.
Dominated those things.
When you're a kid, man, you don't know.
Yeah, I know. But still, when I think about it, it just really hurts.
For sure. But, so, no one's going to hold a kid accountable.
You don't know the internet. After that, I was always into them. And then, I never did any extensive research, right? Only read stuff that was the usual suspects, your 300s, V for Vendetta, Watchmen, all the stuff that was getting made into movies.
Okay.
That's how I knew that. But what really got me into it was actually manga, because I picked up my first manga later in life, which was Death Note. And I read that and just fell in love with it. And I was so engrossed in manga because I was like, man, that's crazy that I'm getting all these emotions and all this stuff from a book that's in black and white. And these stories are unlike anything I've ever seen, because I feel like sometimes we, you know, in mainstream, we'll just say, because like, again, I never did any indie research. In mainstream, the story is relatively safe. Manga, they don't give a damn. They're just going to throw whatever they want to at you. And the coolest part to me about manga, which was one of the more least intimidating parts, is that it ends, right? They have a story in mind. Sometimes they just last 12 issues, they're done. And then whenever I was looking to get back into comic books, it's like, you know, here's Spider-Man 10,000. It's like, oh God, like, where do I start? And then there's all these different, like, alternate universes and different storylines. And honestly, it is intimidating. Yeah, it is. Unless you know someone that can just point you in the right direction and tell you, hey, don't worry about this because this actually never happened. It's like, oh, okay. So I think that's why I stuck with manga. And then again, it ties into our influences, because I didn't realize this until we finally got the book back in our hands and was reading it. I was like, huh, there's a lot of Death Note references to this, with how the demon follows Pocus around and is kind of like, you know, lack of a better term, the demon on his shoulder, you know?
Right.
Ryuk was Light's consequences, and now the demon is Pocus's consequence. And it's just really cool to see how that all came to be.
Yeah, no, Willem Dafoe, give us a call.
Yeah.
I dig it, man. Well, what about you, Will? When did comics first come into your life?
So I went directly for the underground stuff. I love the story.
So like Crumb and stuff like that?
Sorry?
Like Crumb, like that kind of underground, or just off the beat? Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you should mention R. Crumb. That was, you know, that was in the mix, but I didn't read Crumb directly because I was more interested. So I started with, I would argue probably Daniel Klaus, but like the first one I started with was Jonan Vasquez and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac and Squee and things like that. And so that was at that was kind of like pre-teen teenage years. And then, of course, I moved into Ghost World in my teenage years, and that is an incredible piece of work. And really fell in love with Daniel Klaus. And then from Daniel Klaus, of course, I got connected to Harvey Pekar and R. Crumb and all these different, you know, underground indie comic book artists. And the reason why I love this question so much is because I think it goes to show like Alan's influence for, you know, in the combination there between those things, because he has. You know, he has manga covered and you know, the more extensive mainstream comics, covered in terms of his knowledge. And then I have all these weird little cult indie things, dark comedy things, and we kind of just combine that, I feel like, even in our writing. So that was my gateway to it. And I'm still, you know, since I started writing comics directly, I'm trying to branch out and read everything that I can, you know, but I still go back to... you know, I ordered a couple of Daniel Klaus's the other day. I think on thrift books. One of them was David Boring. I still haven't read that, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's that's where I started, and in some ways, that's kind of where I'm still at, even though I'm trying to branch out and get a well-rounded experience with everything. So,
well, are there things you guys are reading now that have come out since that tend to keep you inspired and motivated? Are there certain creators out there that you just can't follow, or you can't not follow?
So Scotty Young for me. I Hate Fairyland was something that was I think very influential for how chaotic something that you can make and yet make it so beautiful, right?
Yeah, see, that's how I felt about the Me You Love in the Dark. Like, not so much chaos in that, but like the beauty within that horror. Me You Love in the Dark was phenomenal.
I need to pick back up with that, dude. I read the first issue, I think the first two issues, and really liked it. And I want to keep.
The fourth issue is one of my favorite single issues of all time.
Oh, like, nice.
It's amazing. So yeah, I love that Scotty Young is continuing to influence people like you out there, man. That's awesome. Anybody else at all?
I picked up, what was it? The Closet. I think that was the name of it.
Oh, James Tynion. Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was
Wasn't
great.
It? Yeah. Jesus Christ.
A good one. I'm working on that one too. I've started both of those. No spoilers, please. James Tynion's fantastic. I mean, the Department of Truth, of course, you know, I mean, is an amazing series.
I think I also like Junji Ito, like anything that dude puts out, I pick up immediately. But it's funny because I feel like I'm at the point now where Will and I are writing so much, and just with how work and the holidays has been and stuff, like I feel like I've been reading less, and I hate that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been reading more, but it's been novels. I need to circle back. Actually, I've got the second saga volume. I am a baby with that. I have just started and I'm catching up. I know I got a long way to go, but I love it. I love it so much. So, I mean, that's next up for me as I'm nice. Comic book wise, is I'm going to read the second volume of Saga. But yeah, it's, I mean, I'm trying to, keep that balance there. And I feel like if you're, you know, I try to read whatever I'm writing. If I'm writing a movie script, I try to read some screenplays just to keep it the flow there and, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I also, my favorite thing is monsters. I had to double check the title because I didn't want to mess it up.
So did you read Stuff of Nightmares then from R.L. Stine, if you're into monsters?
I actually haven't. No, but I mean,
highly recommended, man. If you're like a fan of R.L. Stine, you know, Goosebumps, like he's doing adult horror.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's a monster book and it's incredible. It's four issues of badassness. So yeah, just because just you said that. Yeah. I have to recommend stuff like that.
You know, I know Will mentioned it a little bit, but like, it's cool though because we were able to take a little bit of a break from Pocus 4 to Pocus 5 by doing Grandma Chainsaw. And I think that helped us a lot with Pocus 5 because the story beats we had set up for the second arc of Pocus are relatively the same, but how we even started issue 5 completely changed. And we were so happy with this. Even when writing Pocus 5, Will, I think that's probably the hardest we've ever laughed.
With Pocus,
yeah. There's something that happens in Pocus 5 that I think we both were crying, laughing so hard when it was happening.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to spoil it.
I couldn't stop.
Don't worry. So yeah, but it's really funny. The thing that anchored me when we started Pocus, the second arc of Pocus, was just this opportunity to create new characters. Because we've known for a while where we're going with the story, and making these new characters has been so much fun, and I cannot wait till the future, just the stuff we've got lined up for the future issues. And of course I can't talk about any of it, you know, because I don't want to give away any of the surprises, but it's
so we're excited for the Kickstarter for that.
Let's talk about the Kickstarter.
You guys
run a mean campaign, a speedy campaign too. I'm not gonna lie, man, I've been getting Kickstarters in the mail that I have long even forgotten about, you know, like almost 2.5 years later they're showing up. I get it, it takes a long time to make a comic, stuff happens, but all this, I mean, stuff is happening to you guys at the same rate, like, and here you, I mean, this it comes out in high quality fast, and I mean, you guys fund, and I feel like just, I mean, all you have to do is just post it.
Yeah, you know? we're at the point now, knock on wood, knock on everything you can find, we're at the point where we're funding usually within like 8 hours, which is
incredible.
Awesome.
And I mean, it's not like you guys are shooting for tiny little goals either, just to be able to say you did it. I mean, you got, like I said, it's a mean campaign, to the point where, I mean, it got eyes on you from people like SourcePoint.
We can bring that up too. So we got picked up by SourcePoint Press. Pocus Hocus and Grandma Chainsaw both did. And you know, we can't say too much, but expect to see Pocus Hocus in shops this year.
Let's see, and it needs to be. It really does. It's gonna sell.
Yep.
Oh my god! I'm so excited for your future success,
because we just got the email. Will, was it yesterday?
I think so.
Yeah, we got the email yesterday, and they gave us our release date. So.
Oh no kidding!
Yeah, we'll be able to start soliciting here in the very near future, but.
Can we look forward to maybe some new variant covers?
There will be four new Brian Belando and Jason Smith covers that will be exclusive to shops only.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we got a new cover for Pocus 1, 2, 3, and 4.
And that's what makes Kickstarters, you know, just that much more special too, is because, you know, if you're just discovering Pocus Hocus off the shelf for the first time, and then once you inevitably fall in love with it, and if you're a collector like you myself, you're like, I want all of it. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to realize there's things out there that you can't get unless you want to pay those eBay prices. So then all of a sudden you're like, well, shit, if this stuff's coming out on Kickstarter, I gotta start following them on Kickstarter now. And I gotta get all the covers. I mean, it's
wild to think about. Like, it's like Will and I said, you know, we shipped out the first copy of Pocus. You know, we've been doing this for like a year and a half now. And it's just so crazy just to see how fast everything has happened.
Well,
you know?
Because you guys are producing fast. You guys got 4 Kickstarters out in a year and a half. I mean, more than 4, because I mean, we got four issues out, and then the trade, right?
Yeah. So we've actually ran 6 campaigns in a year and a half.
That's insane.
All have been successful and have definitely surpassed where we believed. Like, the Pocus Hocus 4 campaign was the craziest one that we saw. Yeah, because that was our first over $10,000 one.
That
was crazy for us.
That's so that's motivating as hell to hear. So when you're teach us about Kickstarter success, like what made your campaign be able to do what so many other campaigns strive to do? I mean, what did you guys do different? You don't have to name them by name when I say what campaigns did you learn what not to do things from. But I mean, like, what was your experience with Kickstarter before going into this to know what to do and what not to do?
I hate answering your questions because I feel like I give you the worst answers.
I don't believe that you are.
So our experience with Kickstarter before this, well, for me, wasn't a lot. Because I only backed like books from my friends, right? Because I want to be a supportive friend, and I wasn't ingrained in the indie scene, so I didn't know like half of these creators or anything like that.
But you still had some sort of experience with Kickstarter, right? I mean, you were familiar with how it worked, and
But I think what Will and I always try to do, and this is something that I really love talking about, we strive for quality, and we mean quality in every facet. So we mean the way we ship the book. We mean the way the book feels in your hand whenever you get it. For our digital backers, the highest quality PDF that we can possibly provide without giving you our print files, right?
And you're right about that too, because my book arrived in pristine condition. Like, it was shipped like you guys were shipping me a Marvel key issue.
Right.
And I'm always so reluctant with Kickstarter with trades, because so many of them just arrive in an envelope. I'm like, oh, it's not a comic book, blah, blah, blah. These spines are, I mean, if you're not putting high quality, they're fragile. It doesn't take much to rip the glue out of these pages. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you guys shipped it the way you did, I mean, it is testament to your attention to quality, because shipping with Kickstarters is often the most overlooked thing. You can send me the best book ever, but I mean, sometimes it arrives with me and not so favorable of conditions. But this thing's been loved. It's not just been sitting on a shelf since I got it.
And
it's in immaculate condition.
So even with the shipping, right? We also, like I said, we want to make sure the book feels good. So that's why we researched printers first before we did anything. And I love kind of working backwards, right? So then before we even launched the campaign, we want to make sure that we're at a good spot in the book it's already finished. So that way, by the time the campaign ends, or close to when the campaign ends, we can ship almost immediately, right? Because we already know where we're going. We got picked up by a publisher. We have ourselves under our own personal crunch, right? Because the faster that we can get stuff out to you guys, the sooner you can enjoy it. And that means we're that much closer in to giving another book that could be out in the world too.
It seems sensible to me. It's, it seems like the way to do it. The only thing is you actually have to put an effort to make something like that happen, though. And that's where everyone falls short.
I stress about it, man. So my day job, I work in home health. So I'm dealing with...
Oh, man. You already have everything on your plate.
Yeah. So I'm dealing with making sure other people's families are getting the attention and care that they need, right? And that kind of translates to this, because I want to make sure that these people who are giving us their hard-earned money, who don't have to do that for us, you guys are supporting our hobby. And it's just nice to, it's our way to say thank you, is the least we could do is just try to get your book out within a 3-month period, right? Yeah. And then again, when it comes to quality, we want to make sure the writing that we're giving you guys and the story is quality and it is worth your money. We want to make sure the art is worth your money, the coloring and the lettering is all... just you guys open this thing up and I want you to feel like, man, this is great. I can't wait to see what this team does next.
Yeah. I would say that, I mean, going into, you mentioned, you know, supporting a hobby, but I mean, and you're right. But I mean, I think that we're serious about the hobby. I mean, you know, we want to tell this extensive story. We went into it with an extensive storyline mapped out. You know, we didn't write one issue and then, it was like the dog who caught the car and we were like, oh, well, this was successful. Now what do we do? You know, I mean, like we were like, okay, well, before we do anything, you know, anything, we want to know, like, we want to have everything planned out, you know, because, like, again, we were serious about telling the story. So I think a lot of that, you know, helped as well. It's just kind of knowing what we wanted to do next. If we got those opportunities, and luckily we have. So,
yeah.
I dig it. So you guys are obviously good at maintaining and creating deadlines for yourselves. But when you're with Kickstarter, you can make that whatever you want. When you go with SourcePoint, I mean, deadlines are everything. And being released through SourcePoint, how is that going to affect your guys's workload? Are they going to release the first volume as you guys are producing the second volume on Kickstarter so that it has time to catch up? Or is that how it's going to go?
Yeah, that's how it's going to happen. So SourcePoint, these guys are awesome. And this means, like, people could take this one of two ways, but for us, it's been incredible because they are so hands-off. And it's awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, because they realize that they picked us up for a reason and that we are also independent creators. You know, this could also, like you said before too, Brian, like this could extend to them knowing that they don't have to be on us about anything because we're working on everything as fast as we can, you know? But no, these guys have been awesome. They just give us creative freedom and it's been great.
Sweet, man. I dig it. SourcePoint has catapulted themselves to being my favorite small print publisher. Mm-hmm. And you can almost hardly even consider them a small print publisher with the books they're putting out. Like, I think Good Boy really put them on the map big time this year.
Yeah, Good Boy's awesome. Yeah.
And here you get, I mean, you're working with, you know, Dave Lentz and and now, I mean, Kit Wallace.
So I do want to, I want to say this, Kit Wallace, you know, he's currently working on our Horus and Hell miniseries.
Yeah.
It's Derek awesome.
Gunn was a consultant on, mm-hmm. on, Grandma Chainsaw.
Yep.
So, I mean, did you guys hook up through Dave Lentz?
Ultimately. Yeah. Because, you know, Dave had nothing to do with us getting published. You know, Dave's worked with them before, but it's really, they're not going to publish something that they don't believe in because it is what it is. So, you know, we sent it through. And then I think after that, that's what really helped ease a lot of the conversations with, just showing what we're working on, some of the other ideas that we have, that we're going to be really doing, you know, later in the future and stuff. And I can't wait for us to be able to talk to you about them because, we're crazy and we have some wild stuff, but man, it's just, it's all around just been a fun experience. And
well, I think you guys have found yourselves in good company, like being in SourcePoint Press, because like Garrett Gunn and Dave Lentz, what those guys are doing, like I'm everything I see their name on now, yeah. I'm buying.
It's cool and because they put us in there.
I'm not the only one. So yeah. With you guys being associated with them, it's just going to mean great things once you're on there. And I mean, not saying you even need that to be considered great once you get on the shelves. Like you don't need anybody else's name associated, but it's just that much cooler because I mean the people recognize the community here. Yeah. Once they start seeing names circle around with each other, you know, it just, I don't know, it does nothing but help. Let's put it that way.
It's cool, yeah. Because they put us in the there's Source Point Press and then there's the Four Collar Fiends, and they threw us in the Four Collar Fiends, so we'll have yeah, we'll have that imprint whenever we go.
That's awesome, yep. Man. That's so cool. Let's talk about Grandma Chainsaw.
Let's talk about it,
bro. So you said you needed like a palate cleanser in between, yeah. Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, just because it was one of, like, I had the idea for Grandma Chainsaw as well. Approached Will about it, and we definitely, no pun intended, we fleshed it out and got to where we needed it to be, but we didn't know when to start working on it, right? So after we finished issue 4 of Pocus, it's like, okay, cool, first arc's done, let's just take a break because we want to be at our best still, because I don't want the team, because from where we're using the same team, I didn't want them to be just jaded and tired of just like, oh, I'm tired of calling him this stupid drunk magician. And then we can, like, you know, really work on something else. And then that's where Grandma Chainsaw, that's where we found the timing for that.
Yeah, that one was music to my ears. Yep. I have always wanted to work on a slasher, always. And I just, it's one of those things where it's such an open door that, like, you know, I mean, everything's been done before in some way, shape or form. So it's like, you got to pick the idea that you love and then bring your own like flavor to it. And, truth be told, Alan probably could have came to me with the idea about a chainsaw wheeling like aardvark.
And I would have, and he'd be like, yeah, let's do it.
I would have went along with it, but right. But I mean, I was very lucky because this idea of Grandma Chainsaw should almost be illegal in how good it is, just in the sense that, like, all you have to do is say the title and it sells itself. Yeah. I mean, that's like the idea. That's exactly what you want for a slasher. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't get better than that. So, I mean, there was nowhere to go with it but up. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, we could have done anything and you know, it would have had that title there, but like, mm-hmm. We really just, went for broke and dove into it. And God, I had so much fun. It really scratched the itch I've been wanting.
Was, yeah. And two, yeah. You know, before we go ahead and let you tell us what you thought about it, it was one of those where we felt like we wanted to keep some mystery to it, right? We felt like we undersold the book whenever we ran our first campaign because we just sold it as your stereotypical slasher about an old lady with a chainsaw, because we didn't want to give too much away because there's a lot that happens in one 28 page issue. Just like with all the random stuff that we throw in there, some of the crazy antics that you see Hazel get into, and then the ending where you meet a new group of people. We didn't want to give too much of it away because I wanted people to open it up and just to be like, I didn't expect this. All the feedback we got, Will, and I think you've pretty much gotten the same thing too. Every piece of feedback that we've got, the consensus is usually the same. They said, I didn't see that coming, and I loved it.
No, not in the slightest.
Okay.
No, that was the biggest curveball ever, because all of a sudden I was like, oh man, now the sky's the limit with this book. Yeah. It's not just a survival book.
Can we go ahead
now
and tag spoilers here so we can talk about it?
Let's do this.
Okay,
man.
Spoilers, turn it off. Follow Pocus Hocus on Kickstarter. We're launching, I think, January the 24th for issue 5 or volume 2-1, however you want to look at it. And it's going to be a blast. Okay. Yes. Now enough of that bull crap. Here's Grandma Chainsaw.
Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, I really don't even know where to begin. I mean, yep. That first panel immediately. I mean, I after that first page, I set it down. I was like, all right, this is it. This is the thing. This is exactly what the fuck I want out of a book called Grandma Chainsaw.
Yep.
And so it began. And
this
I mean,
yeah. this is like a drug for me. Like, it really is. Cause like, I mean, when we sit down and write, like I get rabid and like, I, it's like the, when it's like, no idea is too crazy. As long as we earn our right to do that within the parameters of what we're working it on. And it's not really that hard to earn your right to do it when you're writing a slasher cop grandma chainsaw. So it's like every crazy whacked out thing is just like fuel for the fire, you know? And I mean, it's just, it's so exciting to hear this stuff that I've been used to in the past, like having to shoot down because, you know, it's like, oh, that's too fantastical for this project, or no, we got to do subtlety and nuance. It's like none of that with this. And it's just, it's very liberating.
Yep. I dig it, man. Oh, I dig it. So since we're talking spoilers here, not saying I had low expectations. I don't want to make it sound like that.
But the way we sold it, you think you figured it out, right?
Right.
I think it is what it is on the surface. Yeah.
Right. So this team coming in at the end. I mean,
Dead Squad. Yeah.
The Dead Squad. Man, these characters. Just the one scene with the, oh man, I had all of the names down in my head. The bald guy. That gets the ninja star stuck in his head.
Oh, Two-Ton. Like
Two-Ton, yes.
Yeah.
That intro yeah. scene. And it's when it ends too, like the reaction between the two characters, like we nailed the intro.
Yeah. That's,
they were reading, they said what I was thinking in my head. I was like, what an intro. This is great.
Yeah.
So the Will is to thank for the Dead Squad because whenever we did it, we weren't sure because, like, of course, we wanted to ramp up the body count, right? So whenever we were storyboarding it, Will said, well, how about you have like a bunch of like good old boys in the woods just waiting? And then we were bouncing ideas off of each other. It's like, well, that's kind of done a lot. So what can we do to kind of change it? And then we agreed on the idea just to have like a bunch of weebs in the woods just waiting, man. Like,
yeah. Two-Ton.
Tell me about Two-Ton.
What is there to say about Two-Ton?
I really, really wanted a Dark City Strangers aesthetic for this guy. And Brian just nailed it. I remember writing, I think I wrote that in the script, maybe, that he looks kind of like one of the strangers in Dark City. And boy, yeah, he really hit it. It's just every time I see that character, I crack up.
Yeah.
Just like the reveal with the sack. Yep. And he's just like, he's standing there, but he's like towering over us, you know? Yeah. And it's just, it's fantastic.
Yeah. When Doc X brings him out and sets him down in the sack, that was, that was actually like an Ace Ventura when they just,
that's exactly
reference.
What I was thinking. Too.
Yeah.
It was Ace Ventura.
Like you're waiting for something.
Right. Yeah. 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 So that's... Doc X sets down Two-Ton. Two-Ton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
Ace Ventura by way of Dark City.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
So, I mean, it feels like the sky is the limit with this story now. I mean, is this set to be a mini series or is this a potential? Okay.
Yeah, it's set to be 4 issues right now. We talked about the possibility of doing 5, just depending on, because we don't want to, you know, we don't want to shoehorn anything in there or condense anything down. But as of right now, we're slated for 4 issues with this because we don't want too much of a good thing. We don't want a Jason Goes to Manhattan situation where we don't know what the hell we're doing. And, you know, I want people to get their fill, but I don't want them to get full. Like, I want them to read Grandma Chainsaw and then be like, man, I hate that it ended, but it ended exactly where it needed to. Right.
Awesome.
Yeah. One right of those on. Things. Yeah.
Well, I'm already mad that it's going to end.
Because that's the thing with like with Hocus Hocus. Yeah, really. But with Hocus Hocus, the, you know, how that story and that world lends itself, you could do a million things. And we've already thought of several arcs that we can do.
That's
and
awesome.
Like that. But with this, we really just wanted just to tell a fun, crazy story just within it, condensed within itself, all happening with inside of Hazel's home. And we feel like 4 issues will be good for that.
Yeah.
So it's all going to be revolving around Hazel.
Yes.
Oh, man, yes. That's awesome. Oh, that's so cool. I mean, so
more surprises ahead, but yes, it revolves primarily around
The ending for Grandma Chainsaw is, the lack of a better term, it's batshit. So
round
we can't wait.
table. That's so awesome, man.
Yeah, the it's funny too because like a lot of the feedback as well, stuff that people didn't expect, the elbows off the table scene.
Okay,
Yeah, the where we find the girl on the wall.
you get uncomfortable reading that.
Yeah. Well, it's the one where we actually find her body against the wall.
Oh yeah, no,
Yeah.
that was the most metal thing I've read all year so far. That
Oh.
was so perfect.
Yeah, so we were so happy with that, and then we killed another one off screen and had her lungs thrown at her girlfriend, and we just kind of went in on it. And then yeah, we really do. It's funny because it was how we felt about the transition from Pocus Hocus 1 to number 2. It's the same thing with Grandma 1 to 2 because we finally got it out of the way. These are our characters. This is our situation. This is our story. Now let's have fun and let's just cut loose. And Grandma Chainsaw 2 is it's pretty brutal, and we're so excited with some of the kills we thought of.
Yeah, see that's where slashers get real fun is creativity when it comes to that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, the being slaughtered in the manner that you were because of some elbows on the table. And I mean, like, it's just, you understand what we want. I did it, man. You absolutely have your finger on the pulse of what readers want. And, I mean, not that they're saying, not that I'm saying that what you're doing isn't enough, but do you have plans for other endeavors in the future beyond Hocus Pocus since
Oh
Grandma
yeah.
Chainsaw is a mini series?
Yeah. Will and I are we already brainstorming. We have I can go ahead and at least just say the title to it. We're working on a detective story called One Sunday Afternoon. We have another series that we're working on. It's going to be a mini series. This one's called Deacon Dan's Famous Chili. And
I already love
yeah.
it. That's my little
Sold.
brainchild. I
Yeah,
don't
Will.
know how, I don't know where that's going to go, but I'm interested to see what we can do with it.
Yeah, and then we have a couple little mini stories that we're working on, just for a couple anthologies and stuff like that. So,
Awesome. You guys
yeah,
are hard at work.
we definitely know what we're doing, and we definitely know what drives us. And you know, we've already talked to Brian, Jason, Dave. They're on board for everything that we want to do.
That's so
So,
cool, man.
yeah, it hurts us and helps us in some respects, and the hurt is very light. The hurt is that we can only produce so fast.
Right.
Right, because it is the same team, and
Right.
we want to try to stagger releases because not everyone that reads Pocus is going to like Grandma. Not everyone that reads Grandma is going to like Pocus. It
Right.
happens. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So we want to try to stagger releases and just have fun with it. The only really other outside interior artist that we worked with is Kit Wallace. But we try to just keep everything within the team just because we feel like it also kind of gives us an identity, right? Like, so if you see a Brian Bolando illustration, you might think, oh, cool, Alan and Will are going to be attached to that too. If you
Exactly.
see,
You're
or
creating a
yeah,
brand.
right, it's
Like
kind of like
the
what Garrett and Kit, Dr. Christie
exactly.
and Dave did, yeah.
Yep.
So it's just kind of just I don't know, and it just feels right working with everybody.
I
So
dig it, man.
and we're just so happy with the artwork that they're producing, and we just
Yeah.
yeah. They all understand the assignment. We're at that point now where we give Brian a script and he doesn't even send me concept pages anymore, hardly.
Right.
Like he just sends us a final and we're like, yep, perfect. That's what we're seeing. Done.
And all that's going to do is just make your guys' productivity that much faster too. It's just going to speed up when you guys are all working together. 'Cause I mean, that's going to be the thing. Yeah. It's pretty self-explanatory how that works, but it's exciting is what it is as a reader, knowing that you guys are working, you know, as the machine that you are. It's assuring that there's some publishers out there for sure. I'm sure it's going to go beyond just SourcePoint when it comes to publishers reaching out to have their names on your books. 'Cause I mean, I've yet to hear a bad word about anything that's, you know, been anything that's been mentioned about Pocus Hocus or Grandma Chainsaw.
Oh, that's
And when it
awesome.
comes to Grandma Chainsaw, like there's going to be crowds out there that are going to be shaking their fist at things like that just because of how absurd and outrageous and brutal and metal it is. And you know, it's there's
It is
but
what it is. Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
but you're not you're not hearing any of that, man. Like it's just nothing but good things. So
that's awesome.
Be assured that. Yeah, no.
Yeah, even behind closed doors, people still like it. Thank God.
Yes, yes. We're right. In your corner. We're in your yeah. corner.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to say about maybe the Kickstarter campaign or anything like that?
So this is good and yet bad in the same breath, because on the campaign, it's typical stuff. You know, we have our variant covers. We try to keep it relatively small and yet as big as you want to make it. Mm-hmm. So we always run our a la carte system. So if you back anything, any tier, you can add on anything else that's in the campaign.
That's awesome.
Just because we never want anyone to feel like they're being strong armed into buying something that they don't want to get. So like you don't have to buy a $300 tier if you want just like one metal cover. Right. Mm. You know, we always try to do that. So you kind of build your own tier. But this time we went a little bit overboard, but I think we were just excited for our second volume of Pocus. So once it's all said and done, you know, we'll obviously see in the final product, but I believe we're going to have 7 covers altogether for Pocus. We had a lot of people that were really eager that wanted to do covers with us and everything. And we obviously couldn't pick just the 4 that we liked the best to do on this campaign and then save them for later. So I think we're kind of leaning toward the idea of just putting them all out now.
That's awesome.
And then just kind of celebration for the first, you know, return of 2023 for Pocus with the second arc. Here is 7 covers from 7 very talented people that for some reason have chosen to pick up our project and do this.
Hell yes. Well, what's the process of finding variant cover artists? Are they reaching out to you at this point, or are you lurking socials looking for the best?
We actually had one. His name is Sajad, and he did a cover for Department of Truth.
Yes.
He did a cover for Grandma Chainsaw 2. That's awesome. It's pretty mind blowing that how that cover looks. But
yes, it is.
Yeah, that cover is insane. I can't wait to reveal that.
Yeah,
but he's working on one right now for Pocus Hocus 5 as well. So we got him, Summer Dale, who's done a lot of stuff for Bad Bug. You know, and I try to like to always make it from a collector standpoint too, because I like using the same people. You know, it's a comfort thing too, and I think it's a collector's thing. But Mark Marvita, who's done a cover for us since issue 2, is here. Kit Wallace, who has done a variant cover for everything we've ever done, is here too.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah. It's, so Kit, Kit's new cover. I'm actually going to send it to you for privately, Brian. His cover for Grandma Chainsaw 2 is you'll see whatever I send it to you. His cover for Pocus 5 is nuts as well. I'm trying to think, Will, am I missing anybody right now that's done it? Ryan Kincaid, he's working on one too.
Yeah, that dude's a beast.
Yeah, he did a cover for Grandma Chainsaw 1 as well. And I'm trying to think, Edward Bentley, who's done a cover for us ever since Pocus 3, I think. So he came back for another cover, and Edward, I told him this too, it's nothing against everything he's done, but he's delivered my favorite cover that I've seen of him Pocus 5. Yeah, it's nuts.
So, I'm definitely excited. I have a feeling you guys are going to be taking a chunk of cash from me, because I mean I'm a fan at this point. I mean it's awesome. You're the team that you are is exactly what I like to see. Like to me, it's the Snyder Capullos, the Kevin Cuff, Bob France, Metal Shark Bros, you know. Mm-hmm. It's Alan and Will, you know.
Fear into the hearts of our enemies.
Yes. Yes, man. Well, we know exactly what we're gonna get, you know. We mm-hmm. don't know, that's the thing. We have no clue what we're gonna get other than quality, and that's really all I ask for, you know. Just give me something I haven't read before that's good.
Yep.
And I'm a fan, you know. I'm an easy sell.
That we can do. Yeah.
I believe you.
That much we can always deliver.
Now, whether you like it or not, that's up to
you.
Yeah.
We can always, you know, I mean, of course, there's a great debate to be had about what is or is not original and, you know, that kind of thing. But that's one thing we try to keep it as real as possible. And just do something that, you know, it, you know, has a unique flavor to it, or something that we, I don't feel like we're ever on autopilot when we write, you know, and that's
the thing too. We always want to make sure we're both in a good headspace before we do anything.
Well, see, I can tell when it's being phoned in, because I'll realize that I've scrolled four pages and all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit, I'm reading a comic. What is this? That's because the writer phoned it in. I'm not in tune. There's no, dude. If I'm having to go back and scroll to see what I read, it's because I want to read it again.
Yeah,
you know, like there's a certain scene in the first character that meets up with the couple after they escape the house, or
Fury Chan.
I mean, I'm reading it in the car on the way to go pick up my books. I'm not driving. I had someone else drive me. But I laughed out loud. I was like, all right, dude, let me read you this panel. He's like,
they'll prefer the sheath over the sword. Yeah.
Fucking great. And and like I said, I went through and I revisited that more than once through one read, just because of, you know, how it made me feel. So no, I mean, people are drawn in to what you guys are reading, for sure. And I mean, I speak for all of us, you know, I'm amongst the community. So
thanks so much. That's amazing.
Yeah, it means a lot, man. Thank you.
Before I let you guys go, I just for funsies, I out of pure curiosity, I'm always other creators out there, I like to know what you guys like, and it's often a divisive conversation or a question, but I'm still intrigued. I like to know who everyone's favorite, all-time favorite protagonist and antagonist is in comics. Not superhero, not villain necessarily, but your favorite protagonist, favorite antagonist.
Man. So I hate saying this because, so I have two. I have a comic one and then a manga one, right?
Okay.
My comic one, God, I'm going to sound like such a nerd. Well, not even a nerd. I don't even know what I sound like. I sound generic. Batman and the Joker. I love it.
They're as iconic as they are for a reason.
I feel like it's an easy answer, but and then for manga, it's Guts and Griffith from Berserk. Yeah.
Nice. 100%.
Yeah.
I dig it.
I mean, by far one of the creepiest antagonists I think that's ever existed in a comic book for me is the is it Billy and Spawn in the first he has more of a role in the show, but like in the first Spawn or in the first Spawn volume, he's doesn't play as strong of a role. I'll just leave it at that. But that's a really creepy antagonist, and that just pops into my head for some reason. Probably because I just recently read Spawn, so take that with a grain of salt. Having said that, I do really like Spawn, and I think that Spawn kind of walks that line between antagonist and protagonist.
Oh yeah,
You know, pretty well. This is one of those questions, man, where like after the interview, I'm gonna think of like all these great
answers. Everybody does. This is your I'm not saying this is your final solid answer. I like to know what the first thing that comes to mind is. Like that's really what it is.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Batman and the Joker. Man for me, like
Batman and the Joker, though. I mean, yeah, that does make, because there's such a, I mean, extensive history there, and there's like real weighty philosophy there, depending on which route you go with it. I mean, that makes complete sense to me. I wouldn't be embarrassed about that answer, Alan. But I just, something about, for me, I think that when my mind goes to protagonist and antagonist, my mind goes to Spawn, and I think the reason is because part of that comic really is looking at the lines that blur between those two roles and all these different things. And I've just always really liked Spawn. So that's my answer for protagonist is definitely Spawn. My answer for antagonist might be I believe that Billy, the senator's son, who is a serial killer in Spawn, is just creeped me the hell out. Just completely creeped me out. So. Yeah.
Those are first. Batman, Joker, probably the consensus out of, I think I've done, I don't know, 100, well over 100 different interviews now. So Batman, Joker, Yeah, that's a popular one. Like I said, for good reason. I mean, I've got the Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson, Batman, Joker thing, you know, right? I mean, that's
nice.
Definite favorite. Batman Returns. That's for sure.
Batman Returns is one of the greatest. I mean, films ever made. And you
thank
know,
you. Fucking yeah. Thank you.
Oh, no, it is. It is. It transcends. It transcends is. Batman. It transcends comic book. It transcends books. It transcends film. That thing is amazing.
Danny DeVito cast as the Penguin is the greatest single casting in all of film of all time.
How did that get made? Yeah. How did that movie get made?
Yeah,
I don't understand. I'm glad that it did.
My favorite story about Batman Returns is Tim Burton walking in so happy to do Batman 3, and the studio is just like, we've chosen someone else.
Like, we want to go a different route with it. After coaxing him back by saying, you can do anything you want, and he did it. He made a gothic expressionist masterpiece, and they were like, you know, like McDonald's couldn't sell it, like they couldn't market it. People were walking out of the theater holding their stomachs like they've been socked in the, you know, blood. I mean, it's a hell of a movie. I mean, it's one of my favorites.
it's a masterpiece. That movie solidified the Penguin as my favorite DC villain of all time. Yes. I mean, it has been since.
Yes.
Oh man, see, this is why I love that question. I mean, it just gets into your heads just that much further. I like to know who the hell's making my comics, damn it. That's why I started this whole thing, you know. If there's only cons so often, you know, you right, give yourself the means to just make them want to talk to you so you can answer the questions, then
sure, yeah,
that's the whole. this has been fun. This is a long time coming, but well worth the wait, at least to me. That's true. Not gonna be the last time.
Oh, definitely not. No, we'll be bugging your ass for another interview.
Please,
I've enjoyed this interview. Yeah.
our next campaign after this one, we're looking to hopefully depending, we're hoping to launch in March. And that will be Grandma Chainsaw 2.
Nice.
So yep.
Hell yes.
The guys are working really hard on that one right now.
I dig it.
Yep.
I dig it. We'll be talking after there's more things to talk about, man. I'm very, very excited for what you guys have to come for you. I see a lot of success in your future. I see future Cheersies awards. You guys are already a Cheersy winner with Hocus Pocus.
No, we got nominated. We didn't win.
You
we
did
got
not
second.
Win?
No, we got second.
I might have to recount that.
I demand a recount.
Oh man. But I mean that's when it got on my map. I mean, when Ken Moneybags, I mean, yeah, that's actually funny. Before you guys reached out to me, there were two other people that reached out to me like, dude, you need to talk to the guys from Pocus Hocus.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
No, it's people know who you are. That's what I love about this. And oftentimes when you know, people reach out to me, you know, it's a lot of times they're bringing me basic cookie cutter stuff. Mm-hmm. But when there's other people unsolicited reaching out saying, hey, these guys are going to be great on your show, I mean, I have to take that into consideration. And god damn, are they right?
Thank you.
So, man. Hey, you guys know how to get a hold of me. Make sure you stay safe so we can keep reading your books, because You're making it a lot of fun right now. It's much appreciated.
Yep, we got a lot coming your guys' way. So thank you, everyone.
Stay tuned.
And this is how I like to always end these interviews. I just always like to just again say thank you to the reader. Yes. And thank you to the team for making this book possible, because Will and I are just the writers, and without these guys making our vision come to life and putting in the blood, sweat, tears that they do, wouldn't be here. And thank you for the fans who keep pushing more and more for us each campaign. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. All right, guys. Y'all stay safe. We'll talk real soon.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Hey everyone, I'm Mike. Monty Michael Moore, and this is the Cheers to Comics podcast with Brian Wayne.
I'm John Chang.
This is Drew Zuck.
This is Mark Russell.
Hi, you're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.